Hello, and welcome to the Television Spotlight on the Comic Book Cage podcast. My name is John Mayo. In this episode, we'll be having a spoiler-filled discussion about a television show that we think you'll enjoy. In this episode, I am joined by my sister Kay. We have just finished watching the 10th, 11th, and 12th episodes of the 10th season of Doctor Who.
Mm-hmm.
There will be spoilers for this season of Doctor Who, the previous seasons of Doctor Who, maybe a little Torchwood, maybe a little Sarah Jane Adventures, maybe a little Class, whatever else we can think to toss in. And we may come back and do the Christmas special. Actually, we'll probably do the Christmas special that comes after this, either as part of this episode or launching into the next.
Mm-hmm.
It depends when this goes up.
Well, and I think because of the way the season felt to me, at least, we may get into some pretty broad sci-fi discussion.
We will. This, I think, was one of the better seasons for the Peter Capaldi Doctor.
Definitely.
He had a new companion, so he was definitely the hero, the lead, and the instigator of a lot of stuff.
Well, but more than that, one of the things that has always made science fiction a very powerful and moving genre to a lot of people who enjoy it is the fact that it takes very relevant events in mm-hmm. our own lives, and it transports those events to totally maybe unrelatable environments and scenarios, but it creates a place where things that you can't necessarily talk about immediately can be talked about.
It takes familiar social and political issues and economic issues into a fantasy world where it's safe to play with them.
Yeah. And I think they did a lot of that really well this season.
I would say so. I think for me, the Peter Capaldi Doctor, while I like the actor,
mm-hmm.
and I think the actor's doing a good job with the character, I think I've said this before, this isn't a really good Doctor.
It's certainly not the strongest incarnation of the Doctor, but for me, this was kind of the Doctor in retirement, in some respects. I mean, he spent most of the season allegedly guarding a vault.
Well, that was...
So to me, it was the Doctor's been put out to pasture.
There was aspects of the season that felt very different. I don't want to say wrong.
No.
But they made some narrative choices that didn't work for me.
They tried something new, but...
Well, I'm not so sure if it's new, because I think the third or fourth, one of the Doctors was stranded on Earth for quite some time working with UNIT. So an Earth-based Doctor, well, I guess this would be different because he wasn't trapped on Earth minus the TARDIS like he was then. He had the TARDIS in free reign. So your retirement Doctor, okay, I'll grant that. I guess for me, he's been at this university for 50 years or whatever, yet it seems to be modern day. So his timeline is now overlapping multiple times with the previous ones, and that was a little awkward. I really wish they would have done kind of a trials and tribulations or tribulations episode.
Yeah.
Where this Doctor had to basically avoid some of his past selves
mm-hmm.
at certain times.
Well, I was teasing you in one of the episodes of here's a perfect chance for Rory, one of the previous companions,
yes.
to appear.
Well, it's funny because that was in maybe the 10th episode that we watched this evening
mm-hmm.
out of the 12. We'd watched, I think it was 3 one night, 6 last weekend, and then 3 tonight. And the final two episodes, which were kind of the season finale, particularly there at the end with what goes on with Billy and the callback to the character from first episode of the season.
Yes, or at least very early on.
The water girl.
Yeah.
I think it was first. I'm pretty sure it was first episode.
Okay, yeah.
Because in that episode, I was confusing the girl in the puddle with the girl Billy had gotten fat by giving extra
yes.
chips to. There was some narrative stuff that wasn't working there.
There were two different girls she had crushes on.
Yeah. But Billy and this girl, whose name I forget, kind of going off and having cosmic adventures,
mm-hmm.
seemed an awful lot like Clara and what was the immortal girl's name?
Yeah, I can't think of her name, but yeah.
At the end of the last season, going off and having adventures.
See, what I enjoyed about this season was a little bit of the JFK aspect of we do it because it's right, not because it's easy.
I would have gone with Camelot, but fair enough. I mean, JFK, Camelot.
Yeah. But also, and I really felt that, you know, they may have beaten a dead horse with it, but the, and now I can't think of the exact line, despite the fact they hit us over the head with it.
Oh, the without witness, without reward, without whatever.
Yes.
It's...
You know, and I mean, the point they were going for was very good with that. So I appreciated what they were doing. And in terms of taking something that talking about societal norms and what's going on in our world, that was a conversation worth having.
I can't help think, though, that that could have been conveyed differently and better by either the Matt Smith or the David Tennant doctors. With a simple, it's just the right thing to do.
Mm. Well, but he needed someone to be teaching. And the fact that he finally made the point to Missy, after all these generations, literally, of trying, was such an interesting way to do it. It seemed in the beginning that he was going to be trying to teach Bill with the tutoring, and that Bill would be the one to be learning the great lesson out of the season.
Yeah, but Bill as a companion was okay.
Yeah.
Actress was fine.
Yeah.
But the character of Bill was literally recruited by the doctor.
Yeah.
And that just felt off. And there's kind of the implication that during his previous 50, 70 years at this university or whatever, had he recruited others? Has he had other adventures?
Yeah.
And certainly if I were like doing this version of the doctor's comic or something, I would do that.
Yeah.
You know? Because it would allow you to play the whole bit with an earlier version of Nardell of, you know, he's still at this point clueless the doctor's cheating.
Yeah.
So how do you make that work? I mean, because you could almost do it where you had the 30 years back version of Nardell completely oblivious the doctor's not hanging around guarding the vault, while a future version of Nardell is going on adventures with this doctor.
Yeah.
And complaining that you're cheating behind my back, you know, kind of, there's fun that could be had there. But Billy as a companion, I just never understood quite why she was recruited. And Missy hit it on the head there in near the end with, you know, this is exposition, this is comic relief when referring to the disposables.
Yeah. Well, but Bill was recruited because she was someone who wanted to learn. She wasn't someone taking his class because it was a student needing to check a requirement box.
Well, not somebody scared by the unknown, but excited by it.
Yes.
So personality-wise, it makes sense.
Yeah.
But the doctor presumably wasn't adventuring at this point. One of the things they did this season I really did like was pretty much done-in-one stories.
Yes.
There was some carryover, but not a part one, part two, except for the finale.
A lot of the early episodes, though, to me at least, felt like, remember that time we did this with a companion? Let's do it again with a twist.
Well, and to me that goes back to the ending. I felt like I'd seen that before. You know, there was a lot of aspects of this where, particularly at the beginning of the season, ooh, what's in the vault? You know, and playing that up, and it's like, I know Michelle Gomez or whatever, I think that's the actress's name. Was at con and was doing a lot of promotion. I know she's going to be in the series. So, golly, I wonder what's in the vault.
Well, that's funny. I was sitting there going, I wonder who's in the vault because, you know, is it Rory isn't the one guarding the vault. So the doctor's not the one in the vault.
It's not the Pandorica.
Yeah.
But there was aspects of that, particularly when we get to the episode when Missy's being put into the thing.
Yeah.
Where it's like, this reeks of the Pandorica.
I really enjoyed the Missy being put into the vault episode. There were several aspects of the humor in that one I really enjoyed.
There were a couple where the writing was just really good.
Yeah.
There were some where the concepts were great.
I will guard her body in the vault for 1,000 years. I mean, he made a promise.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he took liberties with the, I will guard her body. I don't think he even said in the vault.
Guard over her for 1,000 years. Yeah. Didn't necessarily say in the vault or that she had to be dead.
Yeah, he just said her body.
And I mean, that's the doctor.
Yes, yes.
The rules lawyering to a degree. But there was also an aspect of some of the early episodes, like when Bill and the roommates get the house with the creepy old guy and stuff, where I think in most previous seasons, Bill and one of the roommates would have survived, not all six.
Yes.
So there was a certain, let's put everybody in jeopardy, let's make it look like they're dead, and, oh, we can save them.
And that reminded me of the, was it James Corden who had the house that didn't actually have an upstairs?
Mm-hmm. It was something with not a chameleon circuit, but perception field.
Yes, yeah.
There was that one, and then there was also the, and maybe it was a Torchwood episode, but the haunted house through time and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was another one that I think had the ponds in it that was a hotel that you couldn't escape from.
Yes, yes.
I mean, any series that goes on as long as Doctor Who has, even just with the current incarnation.
Definitely.
You know, we're on like 10, this is 10th season of it. There's going to be, oh, isn't it like that?
Yes.
And, you know, the bar gets higher and higher with every episode that gets told.
Yeah.
But I don't need things to be new and unique if they're really good.
I guess part of it, though, for me was how about we go to the end of time? Haven't we been to the end of time again? It was some of those phrases were just I'm pretty sure we've been to the first colony of Earth before. Well, maybe not at that time frame, but...
But like the end of time, wasn't one of the last times we saw it when we got the Master? Because they were at the end of time and you had Dr. Yana or whatever of You Are Not Alone, who regenerated into the John Sim Master. That was with Tenet. So it's been a couple of years.
See, I was thinking the end of time was when we had Immortal Girl, because she was still...
That was another time we went to the end of time.
Yeah, I see.
You are correct. To your point, again, they go back and back to the bucket list for time travelers, I guess.
Well, yeah, there are certain popular destinations, definitely. Definitely. And this one definitely was on a colony ship's pension.
Okay, so we got the colony waiting for the ship, but the colony ship had crashed. They had to get out of stasis with the emoji robots. We had the two-parter at the end with the 4,000 or 400-mile spaceship at the black hole.
But you just described 3 out of 12 episodes.
Yeah, it's a quarter of the episodes right there. But I think there was... I guess it was a mining ship that was the other one I was thinking.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, and capitalism gone. Impressive.
Now, it's... I mean, with 12 episodes, say you've got the two-parter for the finale. That gives you 11 things. Yeah, let's round it down to 10 just to be nice.
Mm-hmm.
Finding 10 really distinct locales, tone, style, setting, etc.,
mm-hmm.
That's tough.
Well, but that's part of what made the aliens that had to be invited to put up the statues. That one was pretty unique by their standards.
True, true. And that was a two-parter, actually.
That was.
So that was the other two-parter that gets us to that 10.
Yeah.
So that was, I forget what they were called, but...
Yeah, why can't I think of what they were called? They tried to brainwash us into thinking they'd been here all along.
Yeah, but then they broke the brainwashing. I'm thinking of is Bill's mom now.
I know.
I was actually surprised we didn't get an episode where we actually saw the real Bill's mom.
Me too.
That was something that seemed like it was getting built up. Bill's living conditions...
Fluctuated.
I never really felt like we got much of a sense of Bill's life outside of her dating for one evening, her trying to get the house with the roommates... And she worked at the cafeteria and had the clip scenes with the doctor periodically.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
we knew she was trying to have a dating life.
Yeah, but she wasn't as well developed
as,
you know, Amy Pond or Clara. Well, and bringing up Clara, you know, when Bill turns into the Cyberman at the end, that was so much like when Danny Pink did.
Yeah.
It's again, I've seen this.
Yeah. That's funny because I was actually thinking of when I think it was Oswald turned out to be inside a Dalek.
Mm, yeah. No, there were shades of that as well. Well, there was when Oswald the pre Clara was a Dalek, but then there was also when Missy trapped Clara
Yes. Yeah.
In the Dalek.
Yeah.
So, and I don't want people to think I didn't like the season. I did. But I don't think it had some of the high points, even in Capaldi's run.
Well, I guess what I'm trying to reconcile for myself, and part of what we should point out, is we literally watched episode 12, turned off the projector, turned on the recording, and started talking.
If people haven't figured out by now that when we start a movie or TV episodes, we are literally minutes after having finished this. So we're still digesting and processing.
Yeah. Yeah. And that may be something very important to point out at this moment, because I haven't processed the season at all. So I'm sitting here trying to reconcile that where I wish there had been callbacks to previous episodes, I instead felt like they were revisiting plots. And
yes, it felt repetitive, not redundant, I'm trying to think, it's not like they were honoring it or sequeling it or something like that.
There are sometimes when you're watching a show and they just do a callback, a line that says, yeah, don't you remember when we were here before and this happened? Or even if the doctor had said, last time I came to the end of time, I had a great little picnic.
Well, it's funny because I think one of the favorite lines along those for me is Stargate SG-1, where they're walking down the hallway, and I think it's O'Neill saying, it's the craziest thing I've ever heard. And Daniel Jackson's like, is it crazier than this or this or this or this or this? And he's listing the things that have happened to them in the previous few seasons. And O'Neill's like, well, all right, kind of a...
But you mentioned Stargate. One of my all-time favorite things was from, and it may have even been the pilot of Stargate. They're trying to figure out if Daniel Jackson is still alive, where they left him on the alien world. So they dial up the Stargate, and they send a sealed box of Kleenex throw it through the Stargate, and then just kind of close the Stargate and wait. And when the Stargate dials up and comes back, it's an empty box, and written on it in Sharpie is, send more.
Thank you, send more.
Yes!
Yeah.
And it's such a great callback to, he had the allergies, and these characters know each other.
Well, it's funny because when they do sci-fi episodes in Doctor Who versus like the horror, the fantasy, or the historical, like when we get to the bridge of this ship in the two-parter at the end, it's a very Star Trek-y kind of a thing. And no knock against that. I love that aspect. But it amazes me, in the 10 seasons we've done, that there hasn't been any kind of a riff on the Stargate stuff.
Mm.
Of, well, they've got some sort of strange portals to another world. Oh, well, that's how they travel in this galaxy.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying they've got to do a prolonged riff on it or whatever. But it would be kind of fun, just as we've gotten at various times, very Trek-like stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, when the Matt Smith doctor gets pulled into the robot with the itty bitty people, the bridge aspect, I mean, that was very Trek-like.
It was. Yeah, definitely.
Complete with the stance of the way the captain was sitting in the chair.
Yeah.
To have that sort of a fun with a doctor encountering, people who are not Earthlings, but the equivalent. SG-1, it's, oh, you think you're a god, a Time Lord.
Stargate Universe, towards the very end of its run, did a really great sequence of episodes where it was a what if, and it was kind of the ship kind of got split in two by some
with time anomaly. It crashes, it has descendants, and...
Yeah, and they did hundreds of years of Descendants. Mm-hmm. And they did just a beautiful thing, complete with sort of an imaginary time lapse, if you will, of the civilization evolving on the planet. And it was gorgeous. And that comes to mind because of this two-parter, which had this, we sent, 20 people down?
20 people down from the top of the ship to the bottom. 400-mile-long... would-be colony ship that's unpopulated, although fully decked out, facing a black hole. They've stopped, they're reversing, But because they're so close, time is running slow at the bridge at the front end, because apparently they didn't notice until they were right up on the black hole. I guess that happens.
Can't see the black hole because it's black.
Because you don't have, I don't know, sensors or, gee, what's the big gravity anomaly that we can't see in front of us? But 400 miles back at the end, time's moving at a very different pace.
Mm-hmm.
Like a, well, 2 days had elapsed at the bridge versus the 365,000 at the back. Which, if you think about it, why was it saying just 2 days for the bridge? How fast? I mean, did they 2 days out and they hit this?
Yeah.
Anyways, we'll let that slide as just a, they were doing it for our convenience to make the math easier.
Well, but there were a lot of things in that that two-parter that were logic stumbling blocks for me.
I particularly like how the Cybermen not only evolve at the bottom, okay, fine, they've got more time, but then when they start blasting off and rocketing through the decks above them, that could be heard, felt, or somehow noticed without sensory equipment, 500 decks up or whatever, like 200 miles away.
Yeah. Well, and they're going through decks that have fuel pipes in them, but crashing through them isn't causing explosions, but you can shoot at the deck and create an explosion.
Yeah, I think the shooting was being used as targeting for Nordell to spark off stuff. I would have liked to have at least had one of the Cybermen rocket through, hit one of those things, vector off, go out, and suddenly there's explosive decompression. Well, that buys us a few minutes. Should buy us a bunch of time. It'd take them years to fix that, and they've already fixed it.
Yeah.
Because of the time dilation. I mean, there's some stuff that could have been fun lines, but going back to your comment about how in some of the other shows, like Stargate, and I think we also saw it maybe in Enterprise or one of the others, certainly we saw it in Continuum, where you get that time lapse of stuff evolving.
Yeah.
Here for the ship, they had what looked like 80s style graphics in terms of there's a bunch of lights for life signs. It's certainly lighting up in big block type things. It's like it's a very low res sensor.
Yeah. Yeah.
And well, again, it wasn't a bad episode. It had some really fun stuff.
Well, in the beginning of the two-parter, the logic held for me in terms of the Cybermen were taking the adults and upgrading them to Cybermen because they needed people to create their species from. Okay, that works for me. But they were waiting until the adults had had children because Cybermen don't create more of themselves.
Yeah, you run out of people at that point.
You know, but then you go through more years and suddenly the Cybermen have decided that it's more, I don't know, space efficient or cost effective or something.
It's easier to get the kids.
Yeah, which doesn't make sense because you've already determined that you need the kids to become adults to make kids so that you have a future of your species.
Okay, along those lines, did you have any problem with the fact that as a Cyberman, Bill gained about a foot in height?
Yes, I had issues with that.
All right. Wasn't just me then.
Well, no, but I mean, they did determine that, you know, they threw away her behind, among other pieces. So I figured that, you know, they added pieces, replaced pieces.
They readjust because that won't cause confusion as you're, I don't know, trying to walk around in the new body or something.
Yeah.
They changed up the Doctor's sonic screwdriver as they are wont to do from season to season.
They broke it and replaced it magically.
This one was okay. I don't know that it was as well used this season as maybe some others. There were a few times where it was very convenient of, we've got to get the Doctor away from the TARDIS and away from the sonic to show what a great hero he is.
How'd you feel about the blindness and the sonic sunglasses?
Oh, the blindness I thought was completely pointless. Never really seemed to amount to much. I never understood where they were going with it and why. And it just got in the way of the story versus, ooh, let's handicap him and make it cool or whatever. Anytime you've got to start crippling your character in some way, shape, or form, to me it implies the writer doesn't really know how to handle the character.
When they, for me, it seemed to be, I don't want to say the payoff, but they seem to have crippled him to create the situation for Bill to need to be making that selfless agreement.
Yeah.
Okay, I kind of get the situation they wanted to force themselves into. But what was really aggravating me is you've got the Doctor facing a physical combination that he cannot see, and through two, albeit big pieces of glass. On the other side is a very intelligent, we're told, scientist.
Oh, yeah, when he can't figure out the lock.
And she doesn't have her glasses on, albeit. But she can't help him figure out some kind of mirror, ask if he has a cell phone that he could be, I don't know, using the camera on that to help someone else see the lock.
I'd have to go back to that episode and kind of freeze frame, because it's one of those that has, it's like a large luggage lock.
Yeah.
With rotating dials that are discs on end, if you will. And I just couldn't tell if the four numbers, if they were just like painted on, if they were etched. Because if they were etched...
Well, I agree. But let's say painted. Let's make it as hard on him as possible. But it just seemed like the scientist was remaining silent through this whole, I can't see it, I'm blind, not trying to help find a solution that prevented Bill from making the agreement with the evil aliens.
Okay, now this has already happened. The reason she didn't have her glasses on
is
she had left her purse in the doorway so her husband could smash the glasses.
Yeah, I still don't know why she left her purse holding the door ajar.
The other thing, and the actress did a fine job. So she did. Nothing against the actress.
No, it was the writing.
However, well, not for the part I'm talking about. It's the casting.
Okay.
She was 3 feet?
Yeah.
Small.
Yeah.
She, again, did a great job, but there was something about, let's get somebody who is physically so unique that, did she have to be? She could have been a regular height person.
Yeah.
Again, nothing right or wrong about it, but it just felt like, ooh, there's something missing in these scenes. What could we do? Well, let's see. Do we want to go ethnic? No, ethnic's been done. You know, let's get somebody really short. You know, it would have been just as awkward if they had had, you know, somebody who's like, you know, 11 feet or something. Or not 11, but 7. You know, somebody like a basketball player, sort of a duck to get through a doorway kind of a deal.
Mm.
It just, there were and when the other guy, oh, he's been out, he's drunk. It's like you've got somebody who's hung over and somebody without their glasses. Yep, let's continue on like normal. It's not worth going and getting a spare set of glasses or somebody else to, I don't know, double check what we're doing.
Yeah.
There were parts of it where when things like that happen, as a writer, I need this to happen. Yeah, this is good enough. I'll just go with that. Who's going to care?
Yeah.
And, you know, sometimes I don't. Other times it really annoys me, but it weakens what could have otherwise been a really good story.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, they, in some respects, seem to be going for the, in the case of that lab, it was a day where everything went wrong. And the doctor was supposed to believe that what the real problem was and what was pushing the doomsday clock towards midnight was this evil alien ship landing where three enemy armies were already shoulder to shoulder.
But imagine if that sequence was done differently in the lab. We didn't have the smashed glasses. We didn't have the hungover guy. We didn't have him miskeying it by a decimal point. Instead, what we'd had is we'd had a guy who was there to just do the regular maintenance on the lab, check something. He gets a little distracted because he's talking, you know, about sports or, you know, politics or whatever. Doesn't tighten something down quite enough.
Mm-hmm.
They put in the right stuff, so they haven't even done anything wrong. The guy made an honest mistake, but suddenly too much stuff is getting put into this thing.
Yeah.
That's what causes the problem.
Yeah.
Or, it looks like it's fine. We don't need to replace the seal today. And, oh, maybe you did.
Yeah.
You know, something more accidental versus you've got to be kidding me. A series of events had to happen for this to work.
Yes.
You know, it was beyond kind of that coincidental. It's so preposterous.
Yeah.
And again, it was a fun episode.
Yes.
You know, that's one of the things I struggle with a little with this current era of Doctor Who, with Capaldi as the Doctor and Moffat as the head writer, is sometimes the writing has got some definite flair to it. Certainly the acting is well done, but there are times where the contrivances are ridiculous. The situations are just, you know, again, predictable to the point where in the episode where they've got the light monsters, the first one we watched this evening, number 10 here, where Bill is saying, well, of course the doctor's going to be with the the yes. natives or whatever. That's what he does. That's where he's going to be. He's going to go find the most trouble because that's where Bill's going to be, or she's safer. You know, mm-hmm. the characters themselves are commenting on the predictability.
But I loved Bill's interpretation of why the TARDIS is a police box. The Doctor can't resist answering distress calls.
Yeah, but to me, that's one, it required a minor change, I believe, I could be wrong on this, to the outside of the police box.
Interesting.
Of we must always provide assistance or whatever. That's not how I would play the Doctor. To me, his heart's always in the right place. He's just a Budinsky.
Mm.
He can't leave things alone. Oh, what's going on over there? Let me see if I can help. Oh, there's something over there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's just so engaged
yeah.
with the universe because he's fascinated by it. Always wants to see something new or whatever. Here, he's frankly a little cocky. He is professing. He's pontificating. He's been doing it for 50 years this season.
Yeah.
And that is almost 180 degrees opposite of the view I have of the Doctor, who's not one to go and just spout off about the adventures he's had. Or if he does, it's because he's in the middle of an adventure and he's trying to distract people, pass the time, whatever.
Yes.
He is a go and do things, not come back and tell you about it for 50 years.
Yeah.
And that was the sort of thing that just didn't quite work for me. And again, I don't want people thinking, oh, I hated the season. I didn't. I enjoyed it.
No, it was just a very different, instead of the Doctor being focused on everybody, this season the Doctor was focused on Missy.
Missy and Bill. It's your call, Bill. You're the boss. I will do what you say.
But really, Bill was in second, playing second fiddle.
Certainly, the oath with Missy and stuff. Mm-hmm. What I would have liked to have seen late in the season, maybe around that 10th episode, before we get to the two-parter, is something where we essentially get, and maybe it also should have been when we first got Missy's thing there, if she's in there, how did she get there? Maybe hold that up till near the end. But basically give the, here's how she got into the vault, followed by a series of cuts that's basically a scene a year.
Mm.
And something where we can see the years ticking away or whatever, the 5 years or whatever.
Yeah.
To where it's like, oh, she's not ready. She's still not ready. Oh, well, maybe, no. Now she's starting to get there.
Yeah.
So some reason to give that progression. To make it believable that sending her out on an adventure in his place would remotely make sense.
Yeah.
Instead, we get the progression of the Doctor trying to convince Bill.
Yes.
You don't need to sell Bill. You need to sell the audience.
Yeah.
There were aspects where the Master and Missy there at the end bouncing off each other was a lot of fun.
Yes. Yeah.
And again, there were times where we would see Bill putting two and two together. Oh, the translation field from the TARDIS, I bet that's how that works, or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So there were some definite moments, character moments, that were a lot of fun and that were good. And there were some interesting plot points, some interesting concepts thrown out.
Mm-hmm.
But I would be hard-pressed to name an episode this season that coalesced into just a gem of an episode. There wasn't one that was as almost scary, horrific, or whatever you would want to call Blink from the Tenet era.
Yeah.
Or I'm trying to think of some of the others that were just, wow, that was a good episode. This finale lacked a lot of the pizzazz and excitement we got in, frankly, most of the Matt Smith finales. The Pandorica, the time stuff, being mashed together or whatever, things of that sort.
I'm not sure I like where and how they chose to end in terms of going so far as to promo the Christmas special. I get why they did it, but ending with the Doctor resisting and denying regenerating left it on a strange note for me.
It did. But it's not unusual. I kind of prefer that versus a, well, it's all good, I'm going to fly off, and then you get a 20-second, you know, the Titanic crashes into the TARDIS or whatever, and then a, huh, what's going on that? And it's like, I don't know what they're going to do in the special. Here, I thought introducing this new actor as the original Doctor and having this Doctor, which is the first potentially of a new series of regenerations, and the original that I don't know was ever revealed how he regenerated into the second Doctor.
Hmm.
I actually thought that was kind of cool. Now, the multiple, I'm not going to regenerate, didn't work.
Yeah.
The callback of lines there of, I don't want to go, and the lines that Matt Smith had and a few things like that, particularly because the one from, I'm assuming, the Ninth Doctor, Eccleston, I guess that was his last line or something. Those callbacks, they didn't have the resonance, they didn't echo.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas we had just had a series of scenes where we'd seen a plethora of companions, doctor, 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 doctor.
Yeah, that was all beautiful.
It was, but if we had then gotten, as he was having kind of the reverberations of last regenerations, if we had had almost, not superimposed, but off to the side, Eccleston saying his line, Smith saying his line, Tennant saying his line, you know, that kind of a thing. Then it's like, oh, wow, you know, it's like, it gives the signal that as he's starting to regenerate, his lives flash in front of him.
Yeah.
And they almost sold that, but not quite.
Yeah.
And him shutting down the regeneration multiple times kind of sort of set the scene for that with Tennant at one point. Nope, not ready to regenerate or whatever at this point. I'm ready for not so much a new doctor, although I know we're getting that, but a new showrunner. I mean, Moffat is a brilliant writer.
Yeah, but I felt he did better by the Master and Missy, especially with their ending.
Oh, yes, yes, absolutely. That was something that it's like, this is the fitting, you know, sequence for these people.
Yeah.
I think Moffat is better as a writer of episodes than as a head writer of the series or showrunner.
Yeah.
Because I think he did Blink. I think he did, maybe he did or did. I don't know if he did Blink or not. But he did the library one that introduced River Song.
Mm. And she's an amazing character. And Nordahl improved with episodes. I did not care for him when we first got him as the companion back in, what was that, the Christmas special?
Well, yeah. Had we seen him anywhere except the Husbands of River Song?
Not that I recall.
So bringing him back for so much, because it was there and then the superhero one or whatever.
Yeah. And he felt out of nowhere for the superhero one.
Yeah, well, he felt very out of nowhere for here, too.
Yeah. Well, but when they finally got to the how Missy ended up in the vault.
I never understood how Nordahl got there.
River Song's journal.
Yeah, but if he had that, one, how did River know about this? And two, how come that never was a thing during the rest of the season? If he had just to kind of poke at the doctor. Oh, spoilers.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, bluffing. Sorry. Oh, no, this time I know.
Yeah.
I mean, there was aspects they could have done with that they didn't.
Yeah.
And that extra level that of writing or whatever, that next step was what I was hoping for.
Yeah.
You know, I wanted one of these episodes to be one. It's like, wow, that was a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm.
You know, none of these were bad. There are a few that were a little, you know, more horrific or whatever than I tend to care for. But I think Stephen Moffat sees this more as a horror show than Russell T. Davies did.
Yeah.
Not saying that's right or wrong. There's a certain bump in the night aspect to the franchise. But I want to see things tighten up. I'm looking forward to a really strong Christmas special.
Mm.
I think there's a lot of potential in what they've got. But then when we get to the next Doctor, they need to do something that feels like there's a game plan for this Doctor from day one.
Mm.
Whether we see it or not.
Yeah.
I mean, looking back at the few seasons of Capaldi, I'm not really seeing any kind of a strong narrative arc.
Well, even within the season, even though the vault was set up from the start, it didn't feel like Missy was.
No. The other things that could have played in this season, if they could have gotten the actress for Clara, who's the impossible girl who shows up everywhere he needs help.
Yeah.
And if she had just once or twice, even if it was just a cameo, just kind of push something in the right direction or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, even if it had just been halfway through, we realized she was the one who'd gotten Bill to go to that class.
Yes.
And then also the immortal girl, me from last season, who was stalking all the companions. Never ran across Bill.
Yeah.
Again, getting these people to do the guest star bit, I get that's not easy.
Yeah.
Certainly a limitation there. But all it would have taken would would have been for Bill when she's in that interview with the doctor at the first episode to mention, yeah, I had a teacher at Coal Hill Academy.
Yeah.
That recommended, you know, even though that wouldn't have made any sense because of he's already there, even though he's over there, it timey-wimey, whatever. And again, that's why the installing him 50 years in the past or 70 years in the past or whatever didn't make any sense to me. I mean, that starts to overlap with just too much stuff. And apparently this doctor was doing nothing during multiple Cybermen invasions and so forth.
Because he knew his other self was handling it.
I guess that would explain why this is when he started having adventures again.
Yeah.
But would it have hurt to put a line or two of dialogue in for that?
Well.
If it's like, oh, not yet, not yet. Oh, now I can.
Yeah.
You know, don't have to worry about bumping into myself. You know, but then again, highly known professor at a university.
Yeah.
So nobody realizes he's the president of the world or whatever.
Details.
If they were to do another episode where they get multiple doctors and stuff, I would have there be that kind of global crisis. What else would need multiple doctors? Mm-hmm. Have each of the different various countries have recruited the president of the world.
Yes, yes.
And now you've got a council of presidents.
That'd be funny.
Sure, you could get quite a few of them to do it.
Yeah, that would be funny.
So, again, there was some really fun stuff this season. There were a few things where I think if they'd kicked it around a little bit more in the writer's room.
When Bill telling her date all about.
Oh, yeah.
The crazy thing that the doctor had told her that he'd never actually told her about.
So in the two-parter earlier on when this alien race comes and takes over the world because basically Bill has let them. At one point, they have a
simulation
of every possible way the world could have gone to basically play through the scenarios. And in that, the doctor of the simulation emails himself a video of what's happening to let the real doctor know about it. The real doctor finds out about it, and in that simulation, Bill's date goes awry because the Pope comes out of her bedroom.
Yes.
And the date's like, that's the Pope. Mm-hmm. I'm out of here. You're kind of I don't know what's going on here. Don't want to know. I'm gone.
Yeah, pretty much.
So when Bill is recounting this, oh, the Pope's not in my bedroom, out comes Prime Minister of Japan?
In from the front door comes the
SWAT team.
Yeah, and it's like the UN Security Council.
That's
head.
What it was. That's what it was.
Yeah, looking for the president of the world.
Yeah, same idea, different specifics.
Yeah, yeah.
But again, the doctor who we see have the telephone call telling Bill to go on the date, which he knows is going to get ruined.
Doesn't give her any details.
Doesn't give her any details.
Yeah, and yet she's recounting all the details he didn't give her.
Yeah, so it's there are things like that I wish they would have stopped and said, you know.
Yeah.
Because they could have done some stuff where, oh, it's a simulation. Of course, they don't know everything. But things that were surprisingly accurate or really wrong or whatever.
When I worked on the TV show for a whopping season, you know, they would let me read the scripts before we filmed them. And at one point, I walked up to the gal who did script continuity and just casually pointed to one of the pages. I'm like, you might ask them about this line right here. And she goes, why? I said, well, because he greets someone he's never met before by first name.
Mm-hmm.
And she looks at me. I'm like, he greets someone he's never met or been introduced to before by first name.
Yeah.
And she's like, oh, thank you.
Sometimes that stuff pops when you read it. Sometimes it doesn't.
You know, well, and because it was a regular character who's in every single episode that he was greeting by first name. Our reaction at first is, well, of course, everybody knows his name. We deal with that character every week.
Right. But these two haven't met.
Exactly.
Yeah. It's surprisingly easy to lose track of where the characters are and who has met who.
Yes.
I did a spec script at one point, just a blind submission for Star Trek Next Generation, and I had a friend read it, and the friend pointed out, yeah, Worf's in two different places at the same time. I'm like, ooh, yeah, shouldn't happen.
Yeah.
Because I just lost track of where certain things were at the time.
Mm-hmm.
You move some scenes around, suddenly you get some continuity errors.
Yeah.
So I get how that happens, and that may have been what happened here, but that's what editors are for. That's what second pass readings are for. That's what, maybe not a table read, but that sort of find the most OCD, detail-oriented person you can, hand the script to it, does it pass muster, have them rip it apart.
Yeah.
Now, do you have to fix everything? No, but it's a judgment call.
No, but that's something that could have been fixed with probably two lines of dialogue.
Well,
I'm going to send you a video. You've got to watch it.
I wouldn't have done that.
Something. I mean, just something. I mean, he made a brief phone call, hung up. They seemed to have no further communication. Yeah. She was telling the story.
I wouldn't have necessarily shown the full phone call. But the other thing I would have done after he's finished watching the video that was emailed to him, you have 4,852 pending emails.
Yeah. Yes.
Something to imply there are a lot of these.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because then she could have been saying, yeah, he said it was the Pope, the Prime Minister, you know, this person, that person, you know. It's like, you don't have that big of a bedroom. I know. He was a little unclear if it was one of them, all of them, which one it was. It was
went
on for a while. It was hard to get him down to specifics. Just because he would take it all in and spit it all out, kind of a thing.
Well, I liked in the Haunted House episode where she introduced the doctor as her grandfather.
Well, that was, I think, a little bit of a callback to the granddaughter from the original doctor. Likewise, when we see his desk, there's the picture of Riversong and the picture of the granddaughter. All of the bit with the granddaughter, I think, was again setting up the Christmas special where we get the first doctor again.
Well, and I think it helped kind of establish the kind of rapport those two were building.
It was, but it also would have been fun, although and probably not that difficult, because they did it in some of the previous ones with Clara, where imagine if there was a part of his office at the university that had photos of Rose, of Martha, of Donna, of...
Yeah.
You know, Sarah Jane, of the Ponds, of Clara, of, you know, all the different people.
That's a financial outlay.
It is, but when they did the 50th anniversary and Clara got pulled in, there were some of those. So, I mean, I get it's a financial outlay here. Not so sure about over in the UK.
True. True.
But the other thing, and the financial outlay brings it to mind, one of the things I really loved... more so in the Smith era, I think they did it a bit in the Tenet, but it was more pronounced in the Matt Smith stuff, is there would be times when, you know, things have the situation has evolved, they've gotten into the problem, it's time to save the day, and the doctor just kicks it into gear, the music kicks in, oh, we're going to get a speech, we're going to get the action, we're going to get the surprise twist, we're going to get something, and the music is starting to crescendo with the doctor's theme.
Yeah.
To me, it's akin to, and this will be old school references, but deal with it. You know, Airwolf is getting into the dogfight. You get the Airwolf music, you know.
A-Team.
A-Team. They're building the battle van of the episode.
Yeah.
Cue the A-Team music. Do the montage.
Mm-hmm.
You know, with this doctor, with Capaldi, we never get that.
Yeah. Well, and to me, a little bit of that goes back to the, he kind of felt like he was in retirement.
Yeah, and I know I've mentioned this in the past, but that's the sort of thing on the Super Sentai shows and also with Power Rangers. The action sequence starts, you get the music, and it associates the theme music for the show with the heroes doing their thing.
Yeah. Well, but music makes it actually come to mind. I enjoyed the episode where he got to the Roman Legion, or what was surviving of it, and the Scottish Picts, I guess, who had been rival armies, to join together against a common enemy and literally fight till the end of time to save Earth. That
he does some good stuff.
Well, and going back to relevant or feeling relevant to modern events, current events.
Yeah. That episode, that bit with those two coming together, was undercut a little bit by the "you're all children to me" aspect. Yes, well, I know he's 2,000-year-old Time Lord.
To me, that wasn't what I got out of that, though. What I got was, when you squabble, it almost doesn't matter what you're saying. Squabbling sounds like children.
And that's fair. That's fair. That's a decent read. It just, the fact that they were children didn't help.
True.
But again, comments on the time. It wasn't a big deal for me, but it didn't go in the plus column, I guess.
Yeah, but it was a, now that you can understand one another's words and one another's language.
Yes.
Do you understand that you're just squabbling at one another instead of trying to converse? And as a result, you sound like squabbling children instead of conversing adults.
The way I would have tried to make that point, I would have had something that's just a political situation. And you've got a bunch of politicians, not necessarily big names, but the mediators, whatever. They are just having at it, yelling at each other. They are not understanding. Somebody's saying this. This other person's not understanding it. Some of it's language barrier. Some of it is just they don't want to understand.
Yes.
And it's like, minor paperwork thing is going to blow up and cause all sorts of problems, you know, whatever. And you've got this huge room where they're just going at it. You hear the TARDIS starts to come in. And you hear a subtle change about the dialogue. Suddenly they start understanding each other.
Yeah.
Oh, that's what you meant. I thought you were fighting about this. I don't care about that. I'll concede that if I can get the... Oh, that's what you wanted?
Yeah.
You know, and something that plays up that the TARDIS kind of telepathy field, whatever they call it, facilitates understanding, not just communication.
Yeah.
And then what I would do is I would put the Doctor in another situation where the Doctor is clearly going to, well, this is what's going on, and explain it all. No TARDIS. The TARDIS gets pulled away or whatever.
Yes, yes.
And then he's starting to get a little confused as to what's going on.
Yeah.
Showing that he's using the TARDIS a little bit as a crutch at times.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe the TARDIS is just mad at him. But
I thought he did quite well on Mars without the TARDIS.
I thought he did too, but that was another one where it's a, let's take the TARDIS, let's break the Sonic, let's cripple the character to show just how great he really is. Whereas, to me, it's the akin of riding Superman, but you've got to depower him. Riding Batman, but you've got to get rid of the Batmobile and the utility belt. Spider-Man, but you've got to get rid of the web shooters are clogged, you can't use those.
But I thought the Ice Warrior being willing to do whatever it took, even if it was humbling and humiliating, mm-hmm. to save his people.
Well, there were some really good things about that episode.
And I thought that the Victorian, I guess he was a colonel,
mm-hmm.
who learned truly what it was to be brave and to be a warrior.
That's one that middle of the season was about when that was.
Yeah.
I would have moved that a little earlier and had a little bit of payoff there at the end of some sort.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things I liked on some of the Matt Smith seasons is things that we saw throughout the season all somehow magically pulled together at the end.
Yeah.
Whereas, really aside from, you know, Missy going on a crazy adventure with the Doctor, there was nothing that really tied other than the water girl from the beginning.
The pilot.
The pilot. The character and the season pilot. Nothing that really tied the end. Well, in that case, it ties it with the beginning, but nothing in the middle almost, other than the Missy, how she got in the box.
Yeah.
So, it's still a wonderful show. It's really good, but Star Trek's coming back on the air. Maybe not on the air. It's going to be streaming, but still, there's going to be a little bit more sci-fi competition for it.
Yeah.
And I think it needs to up its game a little.
Well, like you said, this was a very episodic season. And just with where the world is at when it aired, to me, it felt very relevant. I'm not saying it was a great season. I'm just saying in terms of hitting the relevancy mark, I think they did fairly well on that.
One or two places, they were too relevant, and that annoyed me. Like when the Doctor commented at one point, well, things like Trump happen.
Yes.
How will that play 5-10 years from now?
Yeah, and I agree with that.
You know, the trick for this is to...
I could have done without that line, I admit.
And how do you have the social relevance without anchoring it and dating it?
Yeah. And I thought they were doing a very good job of, as I said towards the beginning, discussing everything that we are dealing with as a culture and a world, but doing it in a safe and remote environment, which was one of the things I really liked.
how about if they'd set up the finale a little bit differently? Throughout the entire season, Nordell is always shielding the Doctor from the Dean of the University, who the Doctor is convinced is just a complete idiot, says the stupidest things, clearly has not a clue of what's going on, tweets at all hours of the morning, you know, make him an unseen, arguably Trump analog, except in a college sort of a thing. You know, what do you mean he doesn't realize it's that complex? Everyone knows. It's, you know, it gives the two characters, the Doctor and Nordell, something to be doing in kind of the let's walk down the hallway sort of a scene. And then have that turn out, because this would be somebody who's always just a thorn in the Doctor's side. Nordell's there to kind of shield. Turns out that's the Master, who's just for 50 years been poking at the Doctor ever so, you know, as a series of of deans or whatever. To where then when Missy gets out, or this is what gets her out, or something like that, it would have basically been a much more interesting reveal than here's a character we've seen for this episode. And frankly, that reveal of the Master, again, goes back to the David Tennant End of Time reveal of the Master. He'd been hidden amongst you the whole time. Now, that one had to have the fob watch to get him back and maybe a regeneration, whereas here he just pulls off the Mission Impossible mask. Again, it's not a bad season, but there have been better seasons, and a lot of what we've seen, it's so easy to harken back to this or to that or to other things.
Well, I mean, I guess what I did like, though, is that the Master is cruel because he can be cruel. And for the sake of being cruel.
Because it's his nature.
And Missy isn't. Missy has grown and evolved. Maybe not been redeemed. Maybe not made the full journey. But she has improved as a person to some degree. She wanted to go back and help the Doctor.
I guess the issue I have there is I'm only familiar with five-ish incarnations of the of the Master. The Eric Roberts from the TV movie for the Paul McGann Doctor. John Sim, Missy, so that Master and stuff. There was the classic one, which I've seen photos of. I don't know that I've seen an episode in. And then, I guess, Dr. Yana or whatever that regenerated into John Sim. So there's an aspect of if another writer later on wants to use the Master, Missy, whatever, it's almost like they've got to go to an earlier regeneration, which undoes all of that, because I don't know how much they can go beyond where they've...
What do you mean undoes? My objection...
You can't go with the, is he good, is he bad? He's bad.
Right. My objection will be if they try to undo the progress Missy has made.
I think they wrote themselves into a corner, particularly with Missy being killed off. End of line. The Master is too good of a character. It's too...
We thought the Master was dead once before.
Two or three times before. I mean, so they can do that, but then it's a cheat. It's a retcon. It undercuts this episode in hindsight.
I mean, I thought the Master and Missy stabbing one another in the back, which in one case is actual and in the other case is figurative.
Well, I thought it was really good, but what I would have almost rather seen is the Master in the elevator, door shut, he's going down, oh, woe is me, you know, kind of a thing. Cut back to outside where Missy is dead in the ground, shot, all of her regeneration's gone. She's like opening her eyes, oh, he's gone, jeez. Like I didn't see that coming.
And that's about what I expected.
Get up. Shake herself off, get the leaves off, whatever. All right, now I'm going to go help. Turns around. This is when the Doctor blows up the whole level and stuff.
Yeah.
That, it's like, okay, she could figure a way out of. You know what I mean?
I mean, at this point, to me, they could do that. Because, I mean, we saw her doing kind of the slump. But as far as I'm concerned, we haven't done the she's been dead 20 minutes and she's... They could give her her own series and see what happens with her.
I'm waiting for a special that basically plucks a lot of these free-floating characters. Billy and the water, the pilot.
Yeah.
The Doctor's daughter from that episode. Clara, me. I'd probably go ahead and throw Captain Jack in there and a few others. And you've got a team of free-floating disciples of the Doctor that would just be very interesting.
Yeah.
Because I would like to see like a 2-hour thing done with them, not as a team, but as a collective that keeps in contact because they know they're going to run into one another and, you know, just you're going to be around the universe forever in a day. You may as well make some friends.
Yeah.
So, and again, just to pick up on some of those plot threads.
Yeah.
Not that they need to be picked up on, but still. So we may or may not, depending when this episode goes up, be talking more about the Christmas movie. We may save that for the next season. Don't know. Again, it may depend when this goes. So anything else on the 10th season? Are we good?
I think we're good.
Cool. So we have just finished watching Twice Upon a Time, the 2017 Christmas special for Doctor Who. Now, a lot of the things I'm seeing, like IMDb and whatnot, seem to be treating this as a zero episode for season 11.
Well, I think they feel because the Doctor regenerates that it launches a new Doctor, whereas for me, it's kind of the cap on Pierre Capaldi's time as the Doctor.
Yeah, in my mind, because it's his swan song, I'm treating this as the end of season 10, series 10. We do series, not season. It's so British. But I think also some of it goes back to the first Christmas special kicked off David Tennant's run. And really was the start of season 2, if you will. So I get why they do that. But either way, again, I see this as fitting thematically more with series 10 than the next. And we had really three Doctors showing up in this one. We have the Capaldi Doctor. We have, I think it was David Bradley as the first Doctor. And then at the tail end, Capaldi regenerates into the new Doctor.
Yeah.
Who we see for all of, what, 2 minutes or whatnot.
Well, in terms of just broad themes, we've had multiple regenerations where the Doctor is very much in this, I don't want to regenerate, it doesn't feel like the right time, I'm not ready. And he's ranted, he's raved, he's tried to deny it. And this was, on both sides, a more calm, but equally a I'm not ready.
I would say out of the modern Doctors, the Eccleston one was the only one that accepted his death. And he kind of brought it on himself to save Rose, as I recall.
Yeah.
But it goes with the concept that the regeneration is the ending of one Doctor and the start of another. They're the same soul, but they're different people within it, if you will.
Yeah. Well, and Capaldi's at the point in that regeneration of the Doctor of he's lived all of the expected lifespans. He's tired.
Well, he's the first of a new cycle, arguably. I mean, there's some debate as to does he just get another 12? Does it go forever now? What are the rules? And we'll figure that out in probably another half dozen Doctors. Probably another 11, I would imagine.
Well, but there was very much an aspect for his incarnation of the Doctor for the I'm tired. It's not a I'm putting off regeneration because I want to remain as I am. I'm putting off regeneration because I understand if I don't go through regeneration, I get my eternal rest.
Mm-hmm.
So that was a very different take on the regeneration than what we've gone through with the previous Doctors I've watched.
I would agree with that. But if we look back at the last two Doctors, Matt Smith there at the end lived for hundreds and hundreds of years in that final special of his.
Very true.
And this Doctor, depending how you look at it, has lived for billions of years.
Yeah.
Now, granted, one of those days he kept living over and over and over again, so he only aged the day over the billions.
But in the past, it always felt like the Doctor was driven by there was more to do, more to see, more adventures to be had. He wasn't
done versus this one, he is done.
Yeah.
No, I would agree with that, but I think this Doctor's also been atypical in many respects.
I felt like this Doctor was having a midlife crisis. I felt he'd earned it. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah, no, I would agree with that.
But for me, it was interesting to see how they differentiated what was going on.
Yeah, I like Capaldi as an actor. I like the job he did as the Doctor, but I do not consider his Doctor iconic or necessarily on par with.
I don't think it was the best written of the Doctors.
Absolutely not. There are many times where Clara his first companion, was more the doctor than he was.
Yeah.
And while he was interesting at times and fun, I don't like his doctor as much as either Tennant or Smith.
Yeah. I thought some of the things they did in this Christmas special, just from a writing standpoint, were interesting. I mean, you will encounter a lot of people who say you can't have a good, compelling story without conflict. And they typically describe that as actual violence and aggressive drama and heated tension. This was more of a, we have a mystery to solve. We have a question to answer. We took a journey, definitely. But this was not, we're fighting someone. This was not, we're destroying someone. And Capaldi's doctor, towards the end, finally came to this revelation of what happens when the other person isn't doing something evil. They were doing something you simply didn't understand.
Yeah, when the revelation of what the thing with the mysterious entity is, he's like, that's not an evil plan. I don't know what to do when it's not an evil plan.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, that's a first.
Yeah. And yet it was a compelling story, and it kept you going through each step. So it defied some of the rules of writing, I've heard from a lot of people.
Well, but it also did a few things that I felt, in hindsight, it had to do to kind of end this doctor. The whole bit of, we are our memories, therefore it's just the memories of Bill Potts. Is it Bill Potts? Okay, interesting. But that, I think, was mandated when it gave them the ability to give this doctor back his memories of Clara.
True.
Without a cheat in any way, shape, or form, which I felt was mandatory kind of to move forward. It's one thing for the companion not to remember their time. They did that with Donna. But for the doctor to have been cheated out of some memories or whatnot, was not right. There's also an aspect where I wish they could have gotten a little bit more of Clara into the writing, in so much as she was the impossible girl for Matt Smith, and therefore, at key moments in his life, these were key moments in his life.
Yeah.
Two of them, you know, kind of a deal with the original and whatnot, and this would have been fun to kind of toss her in, even if just in the background, kind of pushing certain things along in certain directions.
Yeah.
You know, I liked how they had acknowledged the different doctors and whatnot. I didn't particularly care for the way they did it.
Yeah, I'll agree with that.
But really, after the 50th anniversary special, where not only we have them all in their TARDISes, but we've got that one shot of them all lined up. I mean, that's hard to beat.
When I thought they did a really great job with the first doctor, not just matching him to the original footage, which I thought was really great, but the arc they took that character on over the episode.
Yeah, I thought the actor did a terrific job. The writing on it was very strong. The use of the original footage at the beginning and the end, the reference of, you know, 709 episodes ago of just, we've been at this a while.
Yeah.
Was a lot of fun. And
I also liked some of the interactions between the two doctors in terms of, you mean that's what I'll become, and I can't believe I said that back when I was that person.
They definitely played up the first doctor has very archaic ways of thinking to the current doctor. And I liked how Bill Potts was like, I hope we laugh about this for years.
Yes.
You know, that was, she was taking what the doctor was saying of let's not talk about it and spun it on him really well.
Yeah.
I thought this doctor and the first doctor, they played well together.
Yeah.
In a way that I felt was very different from but reminiscent to the Tennant and Smith doctors and the War Doctor, kind of how they all worked in that special.
Well, and to that end, I liked the first doctor's takeaway at the end of, if this is what it means to be the Doctor of War, then I'm okay with it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it wasn't all violence. It wasn't all negative. They were there for the Christmas armistice.
I took the original term, the Doctor of War, to be a reference to the War Doctor.
It was. And that's what he was thinking. It was only about violence and destruction. Yeah. So finding that it could have some, well, I mean, Capaldi called it with the line of, it's not all like that. They took out the jokes.
Yeah, I thought that was nice. But I also liked how at the end, he fudged the time they brought him back to, but just a couple hours.
Yeah.
And that was enough for that to play out with that armistice and whatnot. Having the Mark Gatiss,
yes,
as that soldier, I thought was interesting.
I knew that soldier was going to turn out to be someone because he was just the captain and never Captain Who.
The fact that we didn't get the name didn't dawn on me until much later.
I noticed that pretty early on. I was like, he doesn't have a name on the uniform. Why is he nameless and still alive?
But they had enough things to kind of distract us from that.
Yes.
Oh, you're a World War One soldier. World War One?
That was beautifully done.
Yeah.
He did the reactions of just the, I thought I was fighting the war to end all wars. And first you tell me it's World War One, then I go to the Hall of Memories, and I see all the war after war after war.
Yeah. There was a lot that was kind of, I almost will say, beneath the writing, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
There were layers there for the actor to draw on.
Well, and when he stepped out of the TARDIS in the Hall of Memories and was saying, you know, I had reconciled myself to dying on that battlefield and just knowing basically it was my time, my bullet was coming, but not necessarily having a tangible, I know in this moment I'm dying and we're gaining this, or this is what my death is for.
Yeah, when he's like, I'll trade my life for hers.
Yeah.
It's like, I hadn't taken that from what they said, but okay, and I respect him.
Yeah.
And of course, Mark Gatiss was on Sherlock as the brother, was his older brother's name. I'm blanking on it at the moment.
Mycroft.
Yes, Mycroft Holmes. But also, Mark Gatiss is a writing partner of Stephen Moffat, who has been behind Doctor Who for this era. I don't know if we get a new showrunner or lead writer or whatnot with the new Doctor.
Oh, interesting.
I'm kind of hoping we do.
Yeah.
Because while I thought the Matt Smith era was terrific, I really never felt that Capaldi really got a clear take on his Doctor.
Yeah.
He was more the naysayer, the grumpy grandfather, or what have you. And he was a little harder to root for. He did a fantastic job with what he had.
Yes.
I just didn't like what he had.
Yeah, that's where I came out.
And I want a fresh approach with the first female Doctor. I want a little bit more upbeat, a little more nurturing than go away kid, you bother me.
Mm-hmm. I'll be honest, just from the, you know, minute or less they gave of her, I'm a little worried they'll veer more towards Missy than I want.
I don't. I'm expecting this one to be a warmer, kinder, gentler Doctor, a little maternal, but not overly so, and one that will be fairly easy maybe to underestimate and then just really be impressed with, wow, that was a good solution. That was a strong.
And what kind of companion?
I know they're going to have a couple, I think. Oh, I haven't really looked at what they are.
I'm just wondering what kind of companion you would want with the kind of Doctor you're foreseeing.
I would go with a mid-30s guy who's taller and bigger than she is.
Mm.
The one that gets mistaken for the leading man, the Doctor, the...
Yeah.
But who's, no, she's in charge, you know, kind of.
Yeah.
And not a love interest, but somebody, it's like, no, she's changing the universe kind of a thing.
Yeah.
Beyond that, not sure. I just want something that... I felt the Capaldi Doctor had a bit of a depressing down nature to it.
Yes.
I want one that's a bit more uplifting, a bit more hopeful.
Yeah.
A bit more uniting and peacemaking and whatnot. And I'm hoping she can deliver the classic Doctor Who monologues.
Mm.
And not in necessarily the same ways we've gotten it before. Because there were one or two Doctors, man. They'd start, they'd find their way, and then, man, they got rolling on that monologue. And it was great. It was amazing.
Yeah.
I want one where it's not like she's struggling to find it. It's just, she just sees that. How can you not see that? Oh, now I see it. You know, kind of a approach. And there, again, tons of ways they could go with the character. As long as it's a fun one, it's entertaining, and a bit more of a positive tone that I feel they've had. And if there's a clear vision for the Doctor.
Yes.
Because I think, like, this past season, very different than what we'd gotten before.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and even then I felt they were kind of struggling with what direction to take the Capaldi Doctor.
Yeah.
Whereas I thought they had an incredibly good and solid game plan that won a few seasons for Matt Smith. And while there didn't seem to be that overarching arc for Tennant, it grew, it worked.
Yeah.
So I'm curious where they go, how it works out. And I thought this was a good special, but it didn't hit any of the high points that I feel some of the other specials have.
I agree with that, but for me, and part of it is going back to, you know, often we comment on, did things kind of hit the social commentary? For me, it was a nice, low-key, not everything is as evil and scary as it may appear.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the world is not as horrible as you may fear.
But I think we've had a couple of Christmas specials where, obviously, when we got the 50th anniversary special, it may not have been a Christmas special, mm-hmm. but it was still really well done. There were some of the Tennant ones that were just, mm-hmm. you know, particularly the one that kicked off his time as the Doctor was amazing.
Mm-hmm.
There have been one or two here where it's like, okay, the spaceship Titanic, yeah, it was good, but...
Yeah.
But like the Doctor meets the superhero one last... Was it last year or the year before? It might have been the year before.
I think so.
That one was good. While I really liked the two Doctors and the interplay between them, even the Many Husbands of River Song, I thought checked a lot of things mm-hmm. that needed to be checked for this Doctor. You know, winding down the River Song storyline.
Yeah, it's funny. The ones that come to mind for me are the one where Matt Smith's Doctor stayed behind to protect the village for years and decades mm-hmm. and centuries.
His swan song.
Yeah.
It had some moments. Again, he had a couple of great, you know, you want me, come and get me kind of.
Well, and part of it was just that caring, protective nature of the Doctor shining through.
Well, and that was the part of his Doctor I liked that the Capaldi Doctor almost rebelled against.
Yeah.
See, I'll save you, but do I have to keep doing it kind of a thing?
Mm-hmm.
And it's not that he was a reluctant hero. He was grumpy about it.
Yeah.
So, you know, this marking the end of his tenure and the start of the next, he did a fantastic job. He should be proud of his work, but I really, again, I don't feel he was given the quality of material that a lot of the other Doctors had been given, of late. And I was ready for him to move on.
Yeah. Well, I was ready for the writers to take a new angle.
Yes. I think, again, Moffat didn't have a solid game plan going in and was struggling to get one. And if we get a new writing crew or whatnot next time, I'd be good with that. And Russell T. Davies, he went for 5, 6 years. There comes a point where you've told at that point 30, 40, 50, 60 different stories, depending how many one-parters and two-parters you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to keep topping it.
Yeah.
And Moffat has done just some amazing stuff, expanded the mythos of Doctor Who quite a bit, and maybe it's time for new voice, new vision.
Yeah.
So, again, it was fun, definitely worth checking out, and I don't know when Season 11 kind of properly starts.
No idea.
And whenever it does, we'll get around to watching it, and we'll see what we think of the new Doctor.
Works for me.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.